Environment Committee. Our topic today is the Department of Environmental Quality, most importantly, the Vehicle Inspection Program. I think that one of the things that it's always a good idea for the legislature to do is to take the opportunity on any program that we've created, even if it wasn't us, those of us sitting at this table that created it, to take a look at the programs and make sure that they're staying on their mission and on their goals, and also to see if there's a change that's necessary with regards to the mission and the goals of an agency or of a program. So what we're really doing today is kind of, if you'll excuse the pun, it's kind of taking a look under the hood of the vehicle inspection program to see if it really is producing the results that it should be producing, and to see if our ratepayers, people that when you take your car in to get it tested, to make sure that we're really meeting the goals that we should be meeting, and also that we're having the effect on cleaning up the air. I do know that when the program was started in 1974, the EPA said that we were, I think, in non-attainment, which means that we did not have as clean air as we needed to have in this airshed, being the Portland metro area. And now we have, actually, I believe it's since 1999 or 2000, we have actually been in what's termed as in attainment. So I think that's, and that bodes well, but I think it's always good for the legislature to take a look. What we're going to do today is we're going to start off with just some brief remarks. Before I do that, though, Representative Anderson, Chair Anderson, did you want to make any introductory remarks?
Mr. Chair, I think it's significant that we are meeting here today. The governor is talking about unilaterally expanding the testing of emissions and the concern over global warming, greenhouse gases. And so I think it's very important that we be looking into and delving into all of the aspects of emissions and the gases that could be harmful to us at this particular time. So I welcome the opportunity that you've given us to come and study this issue.
Thank you, and I want to thank all of the members of the two committees for making the trip from Salem up here to Sherwood. And by the way, you all welcome to my district. And we're happy to be here. What we're going to do then is we're going to start off from the to hear some opening remarks and a brief. That would be a good idea. What did you get here? Why don't we start with you, Representative Gerard?
My name is Bill Gerard, Representative of District 56, which is Klamath Falls and Southern Klamath Town.
My name is John Lim, representing Gresham area, which is District 50. I served in the Senate 9 years. Now I changed the House because we got more friends in there.
I'm Gordon Anderson. I am the representative from Josephine County, District 3.
I'm Jerry Crummel, State Representative, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston.
I'm State Representative Jackie Dingfelder, and I serve on behalf of House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, and this is my third term.
And I'm State Representative Alan Brown, representing House District 10, which is the Central Oregon Coast.
Thank you. Now I think what we'll do is we're going to have the folks from DEQ give a few brief opening remarks, talk a little bit about the program, give us kind of a real brief briefing, and that's going to be led by Andy Ginsberg. Okay, so Andy, let me go ahead and turn it over to you, and then we'll, and then after the department, we're going to just kind of go down the list of folks that we have signed up to testify.
So,
Chairs Anderson and Cromo, good afternoon. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Ginsberg. I'm the Air Quality Administrator with the Department of Environmental Quality. I was asked to give a brief overview of the vehicle inspection program and how it fits into the air quality picture, and I will try and keep my remarks within the 5 to 10 minute target I was given. Vehicle inspection began in Portland in 1974 and in Medford in 1986, and it was part of our plan to meet the federal standard for carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide is a gas that reduces the blood's ability to carry oxygen, causing heart disease and circulatory problems. And vehicle inspection is also an important piece of our plan to meet the federal ozone standard, also known as SMOG, and you can see that in the top half of this picture, what SMOG looks like. Ozone is an irritant, much like chlorine gas. It damages the lungs and airways. It causes coughing and headaches, and it makes people more likely to get respiratory infections. But thanks to the vehicle inspection program and a number of other strategies that we adopted for the Portland and Medford areas, both areas are now meeting the carbon monoxide standard and the standard for SMOG. This slide shows why vehicle inspection was very important in our getting to that point, and in a word, it's traffic. New cars emit much less than older cars, but people are driving more miles and there are more people in the Portland metro area and in the Medford area. And the result is that vehicle emissions remain the number one source of air pollution in Oregon, contributing about half of the carbon monoxide air pollution and about a third of the pollution that causes smog. The purpose of the vehicle inspection program is to ensure that the emission systems on cars are properly maintained. And our program reduces 168 tons of pollution every day in Oregon. We verify the effectiveness of the program by measuring the emissions from cars after they're repaired. And we've also done studies in areas outside of the testing boundary and found that the cars there are 15 to 30% more polluting than in the areas where we do test. This chart, there's a lot on here, but I'll walk you through it. This chart shows the smog levels in the Portland area, and it also illustrates the strategies that we use to improve air quality. You can see on this chart the EPA standard for smog or ozone, and then you can also see the more stringent standard that EPA adopted in 1997 that applies now in all areas. Smog levels, you can see, have peaks and valleys, and there's kind of a cycle here that's related to the weather patterns. On summers where we have lots of hot, sunny days, we're more likely to have ozone formation, so there is a big weather component to the levels of ozone that we have. But you can also see that there's a gradually improving trend that occurs, and that is as a result of the emission reduction strategies that we've implemented. And you can see some of these on the chart. We have vehicle inspection that was adopted in 1975. We have industrial emission controls initially adopted in 1978, and then a series of updates occurred. We had improvements to transit and other approaches to reduce our reliance on driving. In the late 80s, we adopted requirements to make gasoline cleaner in the Portland area. And in 1991, we adopt requirements for gasoline stations to recover the vapors from the fueling operation. And all of those measures together really improved the air quality to the point where by 1996, we were ready to ask EPA to redesignate our area from a non-attainment to attainment or clean air area. In 1996, we developed our maintenance plan, which is a long-term plan we're required to submit to EPA to show how the Portland area would stay in attainment with the smog standard for a long time, for at least 10 years. And a key element of that plan was the Enhanced Vehicle Inspection Program, which was implemented in Portland in 1998. I'll go into that more in a little bit. The maintenance plan has two very important benefits. One is it ensures that for the long term, the public is not exposed to unhealthy levels of air pollution. And second, it enabled us to eliminate or remove federal restrictions on growth that made it much more difficult to site new and expanding industry in the Portland area and also to locate new highways. And in fact, this element of the plan was so important to industry and to the local governments that they invested a lot of time and energy helping us get this plan adopted and implementing the plan.
Kevin, could I just ask a question? What do you think, because you put in the programs to contain some of the emissions, what do you think caused the change from 93 83 through 86, and the other one subsequent in 88 through 90, sort of where it went right back up again.
Chair Anderson, that's caused by the weather. In those summers, we had very hot, sunny summers. Ozone is actually not emitted directly from any source. Sources emit components that combine together to form ozone in the atmosphere. It's a photochemical reaction between hydrocarbons and nitrogen oxides, and it occurs more rapidly if you've got sunlight and hot, sunny days, also if you have air stagnation and other conditions that can allow it to build up. So those are examples of times where we had hot, sunny days and air stagnation.
And thank you, Andy. Not Kevin.
DEQ tests 1.1 million vehicles every biennium. We have five test centers in the Portland area where we test 90% of the vehicles, and then we have one test center in Medford that tests the remaining 10% of vehicles. In Portland, we conduct three different tests depending on the age of the vehicle. Our basic test is measures the concentration of carbon monoxide and hydrocarbons at two different speeds, and it applies to 1975 to 1980 vehicles. Our enhanced test measures emissions during acceleration and deceleration under load, and that enables it to check the emission control systems that were installed on 1981 in newer vehicles. An important piece of the enhanced test is that it also measures nitrogen oxides, which is one of the important components that causes smog, and it's not measured by the basic test. And then our most recent test is the onboard diagnostics test, and that checks the car's computer to determine if the emission control systems are working properly. It's as effective as the enhanced test, but it's much less expensive to operate. And unfortunately, it's only available in 1996 in newer vehicles. We have to wait for a certain amount of time until enough vehicles are equipped with the OBD test. And now we're there. We're at about 50% of the vehicles are being tested by this test. And so over the next several years, we're going to begin phasing out the enhanced test, and we'll just be using the onboard diagnostics test and the basic test. In Medford, we just used those two tests already, basic and onboard diagnostics. Our program is 100% funded by fees. The test fee in Portland is $21 per certificate, and in Medford it's $10 per certificate. And we only charge the fee when a vehicle passes the test. And that's in contrast to other states that either charge for every test or they allow one or two free retests.
Andy, I want to, and I know this starts getting you beyond your 5 to 10 minutes, but I want to ask you about that 1.3 million tests a year. Is that between Portland and Medford, the two cities?
Yeah, Representative Cromwell, 1.1 million tests per biennium for both cities.
Per biennium. And what kind of failure rate do you find, and do you have it lined out by model year? So for example, we could even potentially take the data and say, for example, 1998 and newer Hondas are more efficient and emit less pollutants than other cars. So consequently, if you own a 1998 and newer Honda, we're going to give you some kind of an incentive. Is there anything like? I mean, couldn't we take the data and do that kind of analysis?
Representative Crummell, we absolutely can. In some of the materials you have before you, we have some of that information. If you'd like, I can point you to it. But I can tell you for now that the failure rate depends on the model year of the vehicle, the number of miles that it's been driven, and how well it's been maintained. But we do see over the vehicle population, the older vehicles have a higher failure rate, the newer vehicles have a lower failure rate. Failure rate also is affected by which test we conduct. Of our three tests, the enhanced test is going to have the highest failure rate. Basic test failure rate is a little bit lower. And for onboard diagnostics, since we're only dealing with newest cars now, 1996 and newer, they're not old enough yet to have high failure rates, but they will over time. One thing about the onboard diagnostics test, though, is that the computer will actually flash up on the dashboard a malfunction indication for the consumer. So if that car has high emissions, the consumer gets immediate feedback. So with this test, we'll actually measure a lower failure rate at our test center because people will get their cars fixed before they come and get tested rather than after. But we can provide you with any breakdown on the data by model year, by engine family, by type of vehicle, by station, by lane. We have all that data.
Okay, so that leads me then to one other question, and that is, when we look at the failures, and so a person comes through and their car fails, so they don't get charged, and they drive off, and there's not a limit to the number of times that they can come through, correct?
Correct.
So if I go in and I pass on the first time, and I pay $21, but Representative Anderson goes through and his car fails, and he says, well, I'm going to try another station then. So he goes there and it fails. And he goes to, says, well, I'm going to try one more station and it fails. And then maybe he waits a few days because the weather wasn't good or whatever, and then fails. How much is that? Are those failed tests costing me? Because I went through one time and my car passed, but Representative Anderson went through six times and his car failed. But when his car on the seventh time finally passed, he still only pays $21. Or if he's in Medford, he pays $10.
Representative Kremel, the fee structure was set as it is, where we only charge upon passing. When the program began back in 1975, and the primary purpose was for consumer acceptance. That is, if you're going to fail the test and you have to pay the fee, that's sort of adding insult to injury. And the idea was that we would try and minimize the negative experience of, you know, failing the test by not also charging. But you're absolutely right that that does increase the overall cost of the program somewhat, because people may try and pass it before they get their car repaired just to see if they'll pass, rather than going to their mechanic ahead of time and getting it repaired and coming in afterwards. So it's something that we can look at. One important consideration is whether this would be a major problem for low-income persons. We do have a correlation between low-income persons and having older vehicles that are less well-maintained, so it's more likely that they'll have higher failure rates. And so what we would end up doing, if we changed the fee structure so we only had one free retest or two free retests, we'd probably be adding costs to low-income persons and reducing costs for higher-income persons, and it's a policy choice. My recommendation is that when we next look at the fee, and we haven't increased the fee in 10 years, but then when we next look at the fee to see whether we need to adjust it, that would be the time to evaluate whether we want to change the structure and how many free retests we provide.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Greer?
I'd like to just follow up. I'm curious as to why it costs $21 in Portland and $10 in Medford for the same test.
Chair and Representative Garrard, the reason is that we use the Enhanced Vehicle Inspection Program in Portland. That test, because it takes a lot longer, we stage it so we have three stages in each lane. So every car that goes through the enhanced test, we have three inspectors working in that lane. Whereas with the basic test or the onboard diagnostics test, one inspector can work in that lane, and we can keep the vehicles moving through. Our most important customer service issue is making sure that we don't have long lines. So we have to have the proper throughput. And that's why we triple stack the enhanced test lanes. That's why the cost went up in Portland, and that's why we're phasing out the enhanced test now that we are having enough vehicles going through the onboard diagnostics test.
Thank you.
Andy, let me ask you something else since we're talking about the enhanced test, the basic test, and then the onboard diagnostic test, or OBD. There aren't very many cars anymore that are pre-1980. Quite frankly, is that a pretty accurate statement?
That's correct.
Since that is such a low percentage, why do we go ahead and continue testing them, I guess, is sort of one question. And we use a basic test on them.
Correct.
Correct. So in addition to continuing to test that group, why do we want... I understand that they're not going to qualify for the OBD test because they don't have the same kind of stuff on them that, that the new cars have. But as time goes on, wouldn't it make sense to eliminate, just not test those cars anymore since there's so few of them on the road, and then to eventually eliminate, as you've done with the enhanced test, to eliminate the basic test as well?
Chair Krummel, when we adopted the maintenance plan for Portland, at that time we decided that we would test all vehicles that were 1975 and newer in Portland because that was the earliest year we were testing at the time. Those older cars, you're right, are becoming a smaller and smaller percentage of the fleet, but they tend to be very high emitters, the ones that are still out there. And so, you know, they're the kind of vehicle that the public would think of as clunkers. They are often smoky vehicles, and they need maintenance just the same as any other vehicle. So we could exempt them because they're a small percentage of vehicles. At some point, they'd be so small it probably wouldn't have a major impact on meeting the ozone standard. But then we have an equity question for our public, and it's very important to the public that my neighbor who's got a very dirty 1978 vehicle doesn't have to get it tested. Why do I have to get my relatively clean 1981 vehicle tested? And so, you know, you could argue it both ways. It's a small percentage of vehicles, but it all adds up to the total emissions from the motor vehicle fleet, and how you equitably divide that burden among the public, it makes, to me, makes sense for the oldest and dirtiest vehicles to be tested. But having said that, in Medford, we have only a 20-year window for testing, so we do drop off the oldest vehicles in Medford, and that could be considered again in Portland the next time the Portland maintenance plan is updated.
And the maintenance plan will be updated again in?
Over the next couple of years. It was adopted in 1996 as a 10-year plan, so it's coming up now.
It does kind of make sense to me that, you know, so for example, I mean, you wouldn't take necessarily a 5-year group, but, you know, each year as time marches on and you realize, you know, for example, 1977 and older is not really, you know, is not really contributing to the problem because there's none of those vehicles on, well, there's very few of those vehicles on the road. So then, dropping that off, and then, you know, each model year, as it comes out, dropping off the, you know, the 20 or 20, you know, 25-year-old or whatever the case may be.
Representative Krummel, we can certainly look at that with the plan update. And as I said, you know, one of the important factors will be public acceptance with vehicle inspection. It's important that people feel that it's fair, so we'll have to look at all angles of the question. Moving on, one of the reasons that our vehicle inspection program has been so successful is that we have a large focus on customer service. Some of the main things we focus on is wait times. We want those wait times to be short. We provide evening and weekend hours, so it's convenient testing times. We offer DMV registration when a vehicle passes their test, so they don't have to drive over to DMV or mail the registration in. They can get it right there, and that's very popular with our customers. We have low-income assistance programs, and we also have a recognized auto repair shop program where we identify those repair shops that have taken the effort to get the training necessary to do the repairs. In addition, we're developing some new testing options that we think are going to provide even better service and help us reduce costs in the future. One is self-service testing, and that will enable customers to test their own cars 24 hours a day, 7 days per week on their own schedule. And in addition, we're looking at online testing so that customers could actually send us their test data over the Internet and not have to come into our station at all. Representative Anderson asked for a comparison of our program with Washington and California's program. So just briefly, Washington tests vehicles that are between 5 and 25 years old. They use 3 tests like Oregon, except that their enhanced test is somewhat different than ours. It's not quite as effective as ours is. They test in Seattle and Vancouver and Spokane, and their test fee is $15, and they provide one free retest. In California, they test vehicles that are between 6 and 30 years old. They use the enhanced and the onboard diagnostics test, and they test in all major urbanized portions of the state. And their fee ranges between $30 and $60. And in some counties, there are one or two free retests. In some counties, there aren't any. So their fee is quite a bit higher than ours.
Andy, are both of those states operated by the state, or are either one of them privatized?
In Washington, the program is operated by a private contractor. It's a centralized program, but it's operated by a private contractor. In California, it's a decentralized program, so the repair shops actually do the testing, at least the initial testing. And then if a car fails, then there's a referee testing that's done by the state. Recently, questions have been raised about the accuracy of DEQ's test. And in my written testimony, I provided our reports which answer these questions. And I would be happy to elaborate on any of those aspects of those reports if you have questions about them. But first, I'd just like to really briefly summarize the steps we take to ensure accuracy in our test. First, we use the highest grade of test equipment. Our test is computer-controlled, and our analyzers are laboratory-grade. Every morning, our analyzers and airflow systems are calibrated using pure bottled gases. And if the calibration fails, the computer automatically locks the lane, and the inspectors can't do any testing until the maintenance staff repair the lane. Every two hours, the equipment goes through a self-check. And again, if the computer identifies a problem, it will lock out the lane from further testing until it's repaired. Once a month, our maintenance does a more extensive calibration process, and they also do a complete servicing of all our testing equipment. And then every three months, our engineering staff does an independent audit where they go out and they test test all of our lanes randomly to do a double check on our maintenance staff. And then every month, our statistician looks at the test data to look for trends, and any trends that are unexplainable will cause an investigation to occur. And finally, EPA and various consultants review our data, and they compare our results to other states, and that's another way to check and see if there's any issues. With my written testimony, I've also provided a copy of a letter from Rob Klausmeier, who is an expert on vehicle inspection. He's reviewed our program, and he's found it to be effective and accurate, and he does review and help design test programs throughout the country. So in closing, I'd like to mention that Oregon is nationally recognized as a leader in vehicle inspection because of our innovation and our customer service. Our vehicle inspection program keeps 168 tons of air pollution out of the air every day in Portland and Medford, which helps us stay in compliance with the federal smog standard and avoids a re-imposition of federal restrictions on industrial growth and highway development. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Andy, do you maintain a data bank on the cars and the vehicles you check?
Yes, Chair and Representative Brown, yes, we do.
So it's each, as the vehicle's tested, the next time it comes around to be tested, the information's there on the vehicle then?
I'm going to have to ask Ted Kosakis, my vehicle inspection manager, if we have that level of detail. I know that we keep all of our pass-fail data, and I don't know if it's identified with an actual individual vehicle. Introduce yourself.
Chairs Kremel and Anderson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ted Kosakis, and I'm the program manager for the vehicle inspection program for DEQ. Representative Brown, Chairman Kremel, to answer the question, our database keeps no personal information, but it does keep a very detailed vehicle record per VIN, vehicle identification number. So I could go into our database and look up VIN number XYZ, and it will tell me every time that vehicle visited our station, what the test was, what the results of the test were. So I can take a vehicle and give you a complete history.
Follow up, Representative Brown?
Yep. Then if the vehicle had spent most of its life, say, in the Portland metropolitan area and had go through a series of these tests, you would probably be able to identify when it, as it aged, the difficulties it might have with creating air pollution problems.
Chairman Kremel, Representative Brown, you're absolutely right. We will see vehicles from 1980, when they were new, come in and visit us once, come back the next biennium or registration cycle, probably see us once, the fourth time, maybe a fail, then a pass. Absolutely, we can track that. And we also record mileage, so we can see the mileage increase in the vehicle and the vehicle's ability to maintain the emissions get a little bit tougher each time. But the one thing you've got to remember, vehicles that were kind of born in our boundary, in other words, they were purchased in our boundary, they were maintained from day one. And when you're looking at the various emission equipment and having to be looked at biennially, we see that these cars are usually much cleaner than vehicles outside the boundary that aren't maintained.
Representative Lynn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I hear the testimony, I understand 50-some percent. How many percentage of the cars is past the EQ? 50-some percent when they come?
Chair Krimmel, Representative Lim, our overall fail rate, if I look at all vehicles every year, runs about 12%.
So, which means that 88% pass.
Correct.
The point I'm trying to say is that the 88% pass, time and money has been wasted. And the two catch 12%, 88% majority of the people spend their time and energy and money and gas to get there to test passed. Which means if it's the 1.2 million cars in a biennium, almost the 1.2 million gallons in a biennium, being maybe 1 million gallons being wasted. Is there any way we can detect those people who don't need to come to test because they are already because they are passing? Is there any mechanism to prevent them to come because it's at the 88% they are passing?
Chairs Anderson and Cromwell, Representative Lim. Yes, there are techniques that we're working on. The first is that we recently, from the beginning of our testing, we always exempted the first two model years from testing, that is the newest 2 years. We've recently expanded that so that the first four model years are exempt from testing. And that gets at a lot of those vehicles that would pass the first time. They're very clean. They tend to be clean. And so we've just exempted them entirely from the program. Then the next step that we're going to take to try and identify those vehicles and avoid having them to come into our test center is this new feature I was talking about a little while ago called online testing. And the idea there is that someone who has has access to the internet, or actually we can do this through the mail as well, could just send us their test data, and they don't have to bring their car in anymore. And the reason for that is because of this onboard diagnostics. Under that testing program, we're not looking at the emissions from the tailpipe, so we don't have to have complicated equipment to actually take in the gases and analyze them. We're looking at data from a computer, the computer on the car, and that data can be transmitted to us over the internet. We can look at the data. If it passes, we can automatically update DMV's records, and this person can get their registration without ever coming in to see us. Now, that is a program we are just beginning to pilot. We have a contract that we're just developing with a contractor to build it for us. We're going to pilot over this biennium, and we're hoping to put it actually into production towards the end of the biennium or next biennium. But that's exactly to get at the question that you raised.
Just to follow up.
Since
there has been a 30 years since the inception of this DEQ program, by now we should know what cars fails, how many years has been driven, how many miles, and how many years. We should know by now, generally, what areas is failing. I think we need to set up some kind of new policy that they make sure that some of the times and money and the gas need not be wasted. There might be some gray areas might be there, but somehow we need to look at the issue at this time, and then we need to write a new policy with your recommendation and with the history of the last 30 years.
Chair Anderson, Cromwell, Representative Lynn, we can certainly look at that. The largest variable whether a vehicle is going to pass or fail the test is, number one, the mileage that it's been driven, and number two, the level of maintenance that it's gotten over its lifetime, and number three, whether it has been registered within our testing boundary so it's gotten regular service, or whether it's just moved in from outside the testing boundary. Unfortunately, we can't predict which car owners are going to be doing good maintenance on their vehicles. And that's the reason that we have the testing program. But if we can figure out a way to identify those who have done good maintenance, then we can avoid having to do the test.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Before I go to Representative Dingfelder for a question, just real quickly, how if I was going to do this via the internet, how would I access that test data off of my onboard system on my car?
Representative Crummell, our contractor is building a little data logger that will plug in to the same place where we plug in to get the onboard diagnostics data under the dash. We'll program that data logger with a unique vehicle identification number that just goes with that vehicle, and then the customer after that point can simply unplug it, take it up to their computer and connect it to a USB port and transmit the data to us. So it should be fairly simple.
Great. Okay. Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I have two separate questions. The first is a follow-up to Representative Lim's question. The 88% success rate, is that for first time, or is that the ultimate success rate after somebody's come in? For instance, what is the first, when the initial success rate? Because I understand that some of the cars are going to go back and get fixed and then come back. So is that the first time in, that's the success rate, or is that after cars have gone, had some work done, and then come back?
Chairs Anderson and Crummell, Representative Dingfelder. That percentage represents the total look at the total number of tests for the year. So that would represent retests, coming back, doesn't take into account the first snapshot.
So, can I follow up?
Follow up.
So do you have that information with the first look, what that percentage of passage would be?
Chairs Anderson and Crummell, Representative Dingfelder. We do. I just don't have it stored up here, but we can certainly get that for you.
One other thing is that I think Ted was going to mention that we have, with the three different tests, we'll have three different failure rates. So if you could describe the initial failure rates for the three different tests or approximate.
Sure. What I was sharing with you was a combined failure rate that's looking at basic, enhanced, and OBD. We know, well, in fact, earlier I shared with you that we remove 91 tons a day from the air. Andy shared with you we're at 100 and some. My look was simply at those that failed, came back, and were repaired. We know that being faced with having come to an inspection station, many people tune their cars up before we see them and do maintenance before we ever get there. So when you model that, you get at that higher emission failure reduction rate. But we know out of all three of the tests, the OBD test does communicate with the owner and the driver of the vehicle by illuminating a malfunction indicator light on the dash. And it took us almost a biennium of doing this test to educate the public that if that light's on, it means you have a problem. So we have seen the number of vehicles coming to our station with an illuminated mill of probably about 25% to almost none. Nobody comes anymore. So we know that if it was illuminated, they have instituted a repair before they ever come and see us. We also can look at trends in demographics. We can look at one area compared to another and same model years and see differences in past fail rates simply by the economic demographics. So we know that maintenance and how people take care of their car have a huge impact on what we see.
I have a follow-up question. Just a follow-up comment. I saw in one of the, when I was reading through this information yesterday, I did see a table that showed the variable according to testing station, and I noticed that my station, Northeast Portland, happened to have one of the highest failure rates due to, I'm sure it's related to socioeconomic and the fact that there's probably older cars. But this is actually a question for Andy regarding, I mean, my understanding is part of the reason we have this program, if I'm understanding this properly, is because of non-attainment for CO, ozone, smog for Portland and the Medford areas. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So my question is, are we required to do this by US EPA as part of our, you know, air quality state implementation plan, or is this one of the tools that EPA says you should look at? And then if so, what are some other things that we're doing? Because I know this isn't the only thing that we're doing to try to meet our state implementation plan, and maybe you can illuminate sort of bigger picture for the committee of how this fits in with trying to meet the Clean Air Act standards.
Representative Chair Anderson, Chair Cromwell, Representative Dingfelder. That's absolutely correct. We adopted the vehicle inspection program and the enhanced vehicle inspection program as part of our air quality maintenance plan for the Portland area. It was a choice at that time. We could have selected other strategies, but we ran an advisory committee process with all interested stakeholders at the table, and they selected a suite of strategies that included vehicle inspection. It included asking manufacturers of consumer products to improve those products so they have less emissions. It included requirements for non-road equipment. It included reductions from industry. It was a whole rounded package of strategies. And the vehicle inspection program enhancements were a big piece of that. Now that we've adopted it and EPA has approved our reclassification to attainment, we need to continue implementing it unless we come up with some other strategy to substitute that gets an equivalent amount of emission reduction. So when we go to update the maintenance plan, we could substitute something else, and we can certainly look at that, although there aren't that many things that can get that much reduction. To answer the other part of your question, some of the other big strategies in the plan had to do with gas transportation and gasoline handling. So we have the pipeline that brings gasoline from Washington to Oregon. It goes to terminals in the Portland area, and then it goes on barges, and from the barges it goes up the river to other points, or it goes on to trucks. And at all of those points we have requirements for vapor recovery. The most recent was for the barge loading vapor recovery, which was a very significant emission reduction. We also looked at some of the other types of engine emissions besides cars, like lawnmowers, for example, and other lawn and garden equipment, and they're very significant. And we partnered with Portland General Electric Company to do a lawnmower buyback program where people would turn in their dirty gasoline-powered lawnmower in exchange for a coupon from PGE and a discount from Black & Decker to buy an electric lawnmower, which has no emissions within the airshed. And so there were a whole variety of strategies that we utilized, vehicle inspection being a big one.
One final question. So, and what happens, Andy, if we don't meet our air quality standards? I mean, would EPA, would the feds come in and say, we're going to take over this program because it's designated to the state? Is that correct? What's our option if we decide we're not going to do this? And what happens? Does the state lose control of what programs we're able to implement and fund?
Chair Anderson and Cromwell, Representative Dingfelder, there's a sequence of events that would happen that would get progressively worse. Initially, if we didn't implement the programs that are in our plan, EPA would give us an 18-month warning letter, essentially. It's called a SIP call, and a time clock would start, after which we would start getting sanctions from the federal government. The first sanction is that they affects industry. So if a new or expanding industry were to move into the Portland area or the area surrounding Portland, they would have to not only reduce the amount of emissions that they're going to add to the airshed, but they would have to reduce twice as much emissions as they're going to add by finding some other existing source of emissions within the airshed and paying to have that reduced. And that would really slow down permitting. It would be a big problem for economic development. If that didn't get our attention, the next step would be for EPA to withhold highway funds so that we would end up not getting the resources, except for safety projects, we wouldn't get the resources to develop new highways. Now, that's sort of a very extreme scenario. It has happened in some states. What usually happens is the time clock starts and that gets the state's attention. They start implementing the program again. The other consequence would be if we weren't implementing vehicle inspection, over time the emissions from motor vehicles would increase and eventually we would violate the ozone standard again. We would then be classified as a non-attainment area for ozone, and it would depend again on those weather cycles. If we had a hot summer and we hadn't been implementing vehicle inspection for a while, we would potentially violate the new, more stringent EPA ozone standard, and then we'd be back into a whole other cycle of adopting new regulations and trying to get ourselves out from under all of that. So it really would depend on the scenario, and our goal is to avoid that because it's very disruptive for economic development and public health.
Thank you. Before we go to some public comments and testimony, Representative Anderson has a couple of quick questions for you.
Very quick. Going back to that scenario where we have a hot, dry summer, which we are being told we may have this year, would you expect spiking back up again to this year, or have manufacturer standards lowered things so that we are be preserved from that?
Chair Anderson, when we have hot, sunny days, and especially if it occurs for multiple days in a row with stagnant air, you can be sure that the DEQ staff at the air quality lab are hovered around the monitors watching them closely, because those are the times we can have a violation of the standard. What we do at that point to try and head off exceeding the standard is we call a Clean Air Action Day. We have a whole network of businesses that we work with that we can send them a fax the night before when we think this is going to happen. They will allow their employees to telecommute the next day, or they'll let them come in an hour late to work so they can take the bus if they don't normally take the bus. We'll put out public advisories on the media and ask people to carpool, to stay at home if they can, to not mow their lawns, and to take other actions that would, you know, reduce emissions. So sometimes we're able to avoid actually having, on that key couple of days, have an exceedance. With our full suite of strategies implemented, we're about 10 or 15% below the standard. And so, you know, it's kind of close. Portland's still growing, and it's one of those balanced questions. If we have a really hot summer with a lot of stagnant air, we could still have an exceedance, you know, this summer. But we're working hard to avoid that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a number of folks that are signed up that would like to testify. I'm going to go through down the list fairly quickly, and so I'd like to, but I'd like to start off with Gary Adams, since Dr. Adams wrote a report on some testing that he'd done, and so he's going to kind of hit some highlights for us, and then we will go to the public comments. If you don't mind, folks, when I call you up, I'm going to call you up in pairs so that you can then give your testimony, and then we can move from one person to another. And I do know that some of our committee members would like to be out of here, or need to be out of here, for other meetings at 4:30 as opposed to 5:00. So we will try to move things right along.
There's a magic password here. But, my name is Gary Adams, and I'm requesting an audit of the motor vehicle inspection process. And the whole thing started with my car. My wife asked me, if I had a car, what would you like it to be? And I told her that I would like a new Mini Cooper. I like these little cars. And then a little bit later I said, no. I want to get the car I used to have. And that's it. 1981 280ZX. I had one in Florida for 10 years. I found this gorgeous one in Eugene. So I took it to my mechanic. Vince is 76 on 33rd and Broadway. And I had him tune it. And so he tuned it. And then what I decided to do was to go to the Northeast Station. Went to the Northeast Station,
failed terribly, came back to my mechanic and said, what's up? And his comment was, you know, it's not your car. You know, I can share the test results. There's something wrong with lane 2 at the 33rd station, and I bet if you go down to Clackamas, you'll pass easily. I went down to Clackamas, and I passed. So I go back to my mechanic, and I said, you know, I don't get this. Why is there such a discrepancy? So I found out that you can actually take your car back and ask for a voluntary test. So I went back to 33rd, and I failed again. And in the next couple of days, I buzzed back and forth between Clackamas, sometimes Sherwood, and 33rd, three or four times a day, and every single time I would pass at Clackamas and Sherwood and fail at 33rd. So finally, it got picked up by one of the local television stations, and when he, you know, the reporter talked to me, he said, you know, this isn't a story. If we go out to 33rd and you pass, I said, believe me, I won't pass. I've done this enough. I went down and failed, went to Clackamas, passed, and this is straight driving. And then what happened is we went back to 33rd, and by that time, the DEQ people had been contacted, and they watched me drive through and fail again. So I had six passes elsewhere and seven fails at 33rd. And as I was going through this process, what they kept saying is, the people at DEQ, is that their testing process is infallible, that the machines are monitored continuously, they're calibrated every 2 hours. It's like, Well, then why the difference? This is what they said. One is, it's probably because your car isn't heated sufficiently, which I can't quite understand because I'm driving back and forth, you know, from one to the other. And the other is the age of my car. You know, it was 1981 at the Northeast 33rd station. It was still in 1981, 20 minutes later in Clackamas. And then the other part was they said that the Northeast station had older cars than other stations. Okay. So what I found is what DEQ people say is that's the problem. It's my car. What everybody else says is there must be something wrong with the DEQ process. I've never met a person yet who said, you know, they're right, it must be your car. Okay? So what I requested was to look at some of their data. And this was actually the first thing that was sent to me. This is data just from the first attachment was an Excel file with the data from 2000. And I said, you've got a problem. And they said, no, we don't. We're looking at the data. This is the data. This is a comparison between the Northeast station with Clackamas in the 12 months. This is their data, the 12 months of 2000. And as you can see, the Clackamas score, I just got this, so I get to play with it. The Clackamas score is down here, like 13%. Whereas the scores for Northeast 33rd is over, you know, 22%. Now, their comment, again, could be, yes, but 33rd has older vehicles. Wrong. I did a statistical analysis. Gresham, 33rd, and Clackamas, average age of vehicles is mathematically, statistically similar, as is Sherwood and Sunset. I analyzed 6 million cars to find this out. So, you know, I'm looking at this and saying something's not quite right. And then what I get is, this is about 10 days later, I get a note. Now, again, this is where they told me there's nothing wrong with their system. And there's two things that come up. One is they let me know that there was a hose problem, that there's a blockage in the hose, You'll also notice down here, we mentioned that there was also, or there could be, a possible software problem, that they've had bugs with the software before. Okay. So what I decided to do was to request all the data from 1999 to 2004. And after a while, they did it to me. There were... I found it really annoying. First, it took me a while to get the data. And then the data, each car that's tested, has enough things for 200 different variables. And it's like, well, how am I supposed to analyze anything? It's like, what do these variables mean? What's these keys? You know, I just paid $200 for the data. You know, what's the information? I got some of the information. Okay? But here's the confounds when you do a statistical analysis. There are two confounds. One is when you're looking between stations, the various stations have different ratios of, they're broken out by car, light truck, medium truck, heavy truck. So the vehicles at Clackamas may have a different combination than the vehicles at 33rd. So that's one confound. That mess up the statistics. The other is that there is a difference in the average age of the car. And again, what I did was I analyzed the data and found out that, you know, there's basically two major groups. So what I did statistically, and this took over, actually, I don't know, I didn't count the hours, 100 and some hours, is I analyzed only the cars. And then what I did was I broke the analysis into three groups. That is older cars that are 13 years or older, typical cars, and the 13 years or older is roughly 20% of cars are 13 years or older. Typical cars is 60% of the cars are between 6 to 13 years, and then recent cars are up to 6 years. Okay. Now, that means that the failure rates, once you analyze it, this should be similar. And they weren't. And in fact, when you look at the data, it varied anywhere between stations from 15 to 30% between stations. Okay. So what I did was I published my report, and I found statistically significant differences between the stations for both older and typical cars. And also, I found differences between lanes within stations. Okay. So, let me give you an example.
Dr. Adams?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to ask you to kind of get to the end. Because,
let me show you what I mean when I say there's a problem. This is the last 3 months, I'm sorry, the last 9 months of 2002. You will notice the data has similar failure rates. Then what happens is, for lane 3, it drops down to 42%, and for lane 2, it jumps up to 62%. So by the time, this is where I took my car in, there's a difference between 20% between the two lanes. Now, again, you've heard them say that they do all this calibration, they check monthly, etc. Why is this happening? This is happening over a 9-month period. Okay? What else happened is this. This is the data right here from 1999 to basically when my car was tested in September 2003. The data, in fact, the data they mentioned on the website is the failure rate is roughly about 15%. Look what happens after my car is tested. All of a sudden, the failure rate starts dropping, and the failure rate for 2004 is only 10.29%. So my question is, what happened? You know, what happened here to make those changes? Usually you have about 75,000 vehicles failing, yet in 2004 you only had 50,000. That means why is there this 25,000 vehicle drop, and you know, they're mentioning about what happens is when people's cars fail, on the website it mentions that the average car cost to fix a car is about $180, which means $4 million were spent on repairs in the past that weren't done last year. So their response was, I was wrong. The response was, the analysis was by my car, which it wasn't, by 4 million cars. And so what I did was, I wanted to know what happened. What was the change? So I did a Freedom of Information Act request for all hard copy about what occurred after my car was tested, that it would involve the performance of the stations. What I got was next to nothing. So, you know, I mean, my first response was I got this big packet, and most of the packet was from February 5th to March, whatever, 12th, which was, you know, the request was before February 5th. So, it, you know, you just look at it and go, something's not right here. So what they did was they did their own report. And I have a link on my website that links to their report. What happens is their report itself is uninterpretable because what they do is they mix different stations with different age combinations with different distributions. They also, it appears, never do actually do analysis of lane differences. Remember the lane differences between lane 2 and 3 at the Northeast station? Doesn't happen. Then what happens is I met with them. They said that they complained that I didn't have sufficient information. It's like, well, you guys wouldn't provide it to me. I did the best with what I could. And that's why, actually, I requested an independent audit. I found it really interesting. One of the things that was mentioned was, what is a failure? In my meeting with DEQ, they said their definition of failure was based on the first test. You just heard a few minutes ago is they count all the passes, all the failures. It doesn't make sense. The other part I don't understand, I mentioned when we had the meeting, is why don't they do enhanced tests in Medford? You know, the complaint was is that when you look at the analysis is, well, Medford rate is much lower. Well, they only do the basic test. It's like, why? At the meeting, what they said was, well, the equipment's more expensive. We have the equipment in Scappoose. Why are you not using the equipment that's specified from 1981 to 1995? Okay. Here's the key part where I'm saying there's a problem and they don't analyze it. This is data from 93. This is lane 2 up above. And this is shown in their report saying, you know, here it was. But what you see is, I'm not looking at this part. I'm looking at here. This is data showing this lane is out of control in January. And I was contacted by a chief engineer, and what they told me was that he worked for them for 4.5 years. In 4.5 years, nobody ever came to them with saying, here are the statistics. Guess what? There looks like there may be a problem with lane 3, 4, whatever. Never happened. And in fact, when I do statistical analysis, I use what is the normal statistical package, which is SPSS. When I had the meeting, what becomes clear is they said that they do statistical modeling. All they use is Excel. From what I could understand, I mean, you can get Excel, you know, most laptop to get it free. But you can't do anything very fancy statistically with Excel.
Dr. Adams, let me interrupt you for a moment.
Yeah.
Because Representative Dinkfelder has a question that she wants to ask you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thought this was relevant because you were talking about a third-party audit. And the question I had, Mr. Adams, is, and this is the first time I've seen this, there is some information that we were handed out. I don't know if you've seen this from a consulting firm out of Austin, Texas. It's called the Dilatori Klausmeier Consulting Firm. even more interesting name than I have. And this is a firm, I guess, that looks at testing programs throughout the country. And I'm just curious, and maybe Andy can answer this, what kind of statistical analysis they do in their this type of audit. I don't know if it's considered an audit or if they're looking at calibration.
Can I respond to that? What was told to me, and I've got an email, and it was also told on TV, was when my report came out, I was told that they already have an outsider look at the data. They mentioned a Portland State professor and a person from the med school. And they don't look at the data. That's absolutely not true. I was also given four names of people nationally to contact. Of the four names, two people left the system over a year ago. So it sounds like DEQ doesn't even know who they're supposed to send something to. Another person had changed email, and I never was able to contact him. But the fourth person was that person. I contacted him. I let him know that I'd sent my report. I would like a response. You know, just what do you think? Because, like I said, some of this I know I had insufficient information. But he never contacted me. That's the person. So.
Yeah, this letter is dated April 5th, and maybe I don't know if we can just have DEQ respond, because I'm curious what information went into this letter that's from a third-party person that has reviewed either the testing and the calibration processes. I'm not sure the extent of data, and I'd be interested to hear from DEQ on what this is about.
Andy, can you respond to that?
Chair Carmel, Chair Anderson, Representative Dingfelder. Rob Klossmeyer was involved in the initial design of our enhanced vehicle inspection program. He actually helped develop the testing protocol that we would be using, and he's tracked our program very closely throughout the years. His profession is helping states design vehicle inspection programs and also designing audit programs for existing vehicle inspection programs. He looks closely at all of the data submitted by all the states, as Mr. Kasakis mentioned earlier when he was testifying. We submit all of our data to both to EPA and to national repositories, the same data that Dr. Adams would have available to him. And statistical analysis is conducted on it. It's also compared to other states' data, and that's the kind of look they are taking. Now, on the national scale level, they're most likely not looking at lane-to-lane variation, although they may be doing a study of that type of thing, so they may look at it. They're looking at overall failure rates by model years. They're looking at the effectiveness of various types of tests. They'll compare our OBD test results to another state's test results. They'll compare our enhanced test results, et cetera. They do various types of analysis of the data, but they have access to all of the information.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson,
I would like to ask a question either of you or Scott. When we were over at the other facility, I asked the question about how often you have a failure of the testing, and I believe you told me that you had three between 1998 and today, and two of those were just in the equipment itself. Was that other failure to Dr. Adams, or
Chair
is that
Anderson,
the only failure we had?
Yeah, we were talking about the calibration of our analyzers, and those analyzers, as we explained, we do a check every morning, and then every 2 hours the analyzers check themselves. And since we've begun the enhanced testing program, there have been three times where the system has identified a calibration problem and locked down. The problem that occurred when Dr. Adams brought his car through had to do with the airflow that was going from his car through the hose and into the analyzer. There was blockage. As you recall from those hoses, there's a large suction on them. The hose had sucked up a piece of debris that was partially blocking it. At the time, we were upgrading, reconfiguring our calibration process. And so the way we were configured for those 3 months when Dr. Adams saw the spike in our data, our equipment didn't detect the fact that there was a blockage in the hose. We identified it at approximately the same time that Dr. Adams identified it. Of course, that lane was repaired, and then all of the other lanes were reconfigured so that problem couldn't happen again. But what actually happened, and if I can explain in a little more detail if you're interested, the point when where we inject the propane calibration gas into the hose was moved, and it was moved to a point beyond where the blockage was. And that was done because cars were running over the hoses and damaging the equipment. So with consultation from the manufacturer of the equipment, we moved the hose, moved the point where we do the propane injection. It was not the right place to move it to, as it turned out, because it couldn't detect that blockage that occurred when Dr. Adams came through. We identified the problem, we repaired the problem, and that can't happen again. So he did actually identify a real problem that occurred in lane 2 at the Northeast Station. It only occurred at lane 2 in the Northeast Station for a few months, and it was repaired. And I just, to put it in perspective, since 1975, we test approximately a million vehicles per year, so 30-some million vehicles have been tested, and we had three months with one lane that was registering a slightly elevated level of emissions because of this blockage. And another thing, I just to point out to put it in perspective, a vehicle that was properly maintained would not have failed the test even in that lane. The change in the emissions was a few percentage point increase, and it's a little bit exaggerated on these charts because of the scale, but it's an increase in the failure rate. As we mentioned when we had the tour earlier, a well-maintained car would pass the test by over 100%, or would be way cleaner than the car. So a car that is marginal, and that's why we told Dr. Adams that the age of his vehicle was a factor here, an old vehicle built in a year when emission control systems were not as stable as they are today, that may not be properly maintained, could bounce in and out of meeting the standard. And with this problem with the lane where it was reading slightly high, it was just enough to cause this car to go over the standard, whereas in other lanes it wasn't. Most cars wouldn't be in that situation. So even with the problem we had, it was a very limited problem, both in time and extent.
Follow up Representative Anderson and then Representative Girard.
Dr. Adams, how would you comment?
I think if it wasn't so annoying, it would be humorous. I went through, like I said, I spent probably at least 200 hours analyzing millions of cars. And you saw, lane 2 with it elevating over 9 months. I didn't drive that lane for 9 months. That's hundreds of cars went through that lane and failed. It did it for 9 months. They say they check everything every month. The issue, the comment they made was, you were just there, but we would have caught it with the next testing. Well, you had 8 months before that. You didn't catch it. And I just picked out that one example because of shortness of time. I could pick you out a lot of examples. In fact, I can pick you out one right now. And that is, right now, in fact, over the last 9 months, the failure rate in Scappoose has climbed dramatically. Why didn't they find this? Why didn't they fix this? But I'll give you an idea of what's causing it, and I got this from an engineer. In Scappoose, there's not very many cars go through. Okay, so and when you have the equipment on, it's awfully noisy. So what happens is they shut down the equipment. An old car comes up, you flip it on, guess what? It fails. That's what I got from an engineer. So if you go, and the data's on my sheet, and I'm not sure if it's on their sheet, I don't think so. If you look at Scappoose, the failure rate is increasing. The issue that I keep saying over and over is what they don't do in their analysis is they analyze data roughly and very roughly by station. You could have two stations with a 15% failure rate. One station, the failure rates across three lanes is 14%, 15%, 16%. The average failure is 15%. You could have another station had an average failure rate of 15%. The failure rate, again, this is exaggerated, could be 15%, 25%, and 5%. My complaint is they don't analyze the data by lane, and what happens is, because they don't do that, people are failing their tests. This calibration, we've already got proof that it doesn't work the way they said. They had soda cans and twigs in there, and they said it worked. They aren't analyzing the data they should.
Representative Gerard?
I have a question really for Representative Anderson. Did you request the letter from Mr. Klossmeyer? Because the letter is addressed.
It's just provided, and this is in the packet, I think, that Andy has gave the staff to give us at the beginning of the hearing today.
I'm just curious, and I really don't know who to ask, to be honest with you. Who requested this information from Mr. Klossmeyer? Was it the DEQ office here? In that it seems odd that you would ask somebody who built the place how it's still running, not expecting any surprise response. In other words, does he come out and take a look at the stations and inspect them periodically? I'm just kind of curious what provoked this letter.
Chair Crummell, Chair Anderson, and Representative Gerard, we requested the letter from Rob Klossmeyer because Rob Klossmeyer is a recognized national expert on vehicle inspection programs. He didn't build our test program, but he was a consultant for us in helping us to design it. So he's an independent consultant that works with different states and helps them work with their contractors to make sure that they get the best possible
design. Has he ever been to Oregon?
He has multiple times. He's been to Oregon, and he's also, most importantly, he looks at our test data very closely.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Just to let everyone know, we're going to go past 4:30. Because we have several people that are signed up, and because you made the effort to be here, we're going to make sure that we hear and get on the record what you want to say. So, if everybody will just be patient with us, we will get to you. But we are going to continue beyond 4:30. I understand that some of our members are going to have to leave, and when they have to leave, they can just slip out. But we're going to continue going. So.
The sum up is all these issues are the reason why I'm wanting an independent audit. It hasn't been done in the past, obviously. They said they were doing it now. That hasn't been true. They may find some errors in mine. But the issue is, the thing that he's brought up is they say, well, in 2 years we're going to have this different system. Right now, there's cars going through the system and failing, and I don't know if they should really fail or not.
Well, thank you, Dr. Adams. I think another question that does come up, though, then, too, is how many people then are going out and paying for repairs that they don't need to pay for.
Absolutely.
And I think that does bring up the larger issue. I want to thank you, Dr. Adams, for coming here, and I apologize for rushing you.
No, that's fine.
But I do appreciate you coming sharing the data and the reports with us in this forum.
Can I make one more comment? I apologize.
Sure.
But not for me. There's someone who would like to be here who is not, and that's Vince McMahon, who runs Vince's 76 on 33rd and Broadway. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't even know this is a problem. I would have failed, I would take my car, I would complain to the mechanic, etc. He can't be here today. But, the comment he made was he had a stack of papers, maybe this thick, and all those were from customers who had gone to 33rd and failed and taken it to Clackamas or Sherwood and passed. And the question was, has he ever had a customer that failed someplace else and taken it to 33rd and passed? Never happened. So based on that, well, in fact, this was my reminder. This actually had cookies in it. The cookies was because where my wife works, there was somebody, a coworker, who failed at 33rd four times. So after the first time, she went, had her car fixed, $585. She takes it back to 33rd, fails. Mechanic works on it, fails. Mechanic works on it, fails. And then what happened was she heard that I'd done this report. And so she asked me, you know, where should she take her car? So I looked at the thing and said, okay, take it to Clackamas, this lane, and I bet you pass. That's what the cookies were for. And she passed. That was my payment.
Thank you. Let me have, let me call up Jim Hauser and Felix LaPointe? LaPlante. So if you would go ahead and please come up. I want to thank you both for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for staying late.
We will do it.
Chair Krummel, Chair Anderson, and members of the committee, representatives. My name is Jim Hauser. My wife and I own and operate Hawthorne Auto Clinic in Southeast Portland. Our store is a DEQ-recognized repair facility and a State of Washington Department of Ecology-authorized emission repair facility. I've been performing vehicle emission-related repairs since 1976. I'm an ASE-certified master automotive technician with advanced engine performance status and an EPA train-the-trainer certified for vehicle emission repairs. I'm here today on behalf of Northwest Automotive Trades Association. NATA represents 600 automotive repair, service, and parts businesses in Oregon and the Northwest region. I also represented NATA's predecessor, ASA, Automotive Service Association, in the 1990s on DEQ's advisory committee for the creation of the Enhanced Test Program. As an advisory committee member, I reviewed policies and procedures as the vehicle inspection program, the VIP, transitioned from the simpler two-speed idle test to the more comprehensive and precise total volume sampling test. Throughout the test development process, I was impressed with the thoroughness and professionalism with which the DEQ staff conducted their research and development on this test protocol. I was also very impressed with how DEQ was able to demonstrate to the EPA through their painstaking research and on-site testing that the Oregon Bar 31 test would be able to yield essentially the same test results as the more cumbersome and expensive IM-240 EPA federal test. This effort by DEQ staff saved the state of Oregon and Oregon motorists untold thousands of dollars in unnecessary staff and testing time, as well as wear and tear on test equipment and citizen vehicles. It was during my time on the DEQ advisory panel that our store purchased repair-grade exhaust emission test equipment designed to yield test results similar to those obtained by the enhanced test, since repair-grade emission test equipment measures in percent concentration instead of the grams per mile. It's less precise and also costs one-tenth of the test-grade equipment. So we spent considerable time baselining our shop equipment and procedures. We wanted to confirm that our procedures were identifying the same problems DEQ was detecting. Conversely, when emission repairs were completed, we expected the DEQ retest to report the same level of emission reductions we had measured with our equipment. We received a great deal of assistance during the baselining process from the staff at the Clackamas Inspection Station and from the VIP lab in Southeast Portland. We learned that if DEQ's equipment failed a vehicle at three times the federal standard, that most likely our equipment was going to register the same level of failure. We discovered that if we were able to measure an 80% reduction in tailpipe emissions with our equipment, we were likely to find a corresponding reduction at the VIP test center. Our store has been very adept at efficiently and accurately repairing vehicle emission failures by implementing our careful, repeatable procedures, including periodic test equipment calibration with the appropriate calibration gas. We know our test results rarely disagree with DEQ's test results, and vehicles with failing test results almost always have real, identifiable emission problems. One other issue I'd like to address quickly is the question of test result variability. The same vehicle run on the same equipment through the same test cycle can generate different test results. In my experience, this variability problem results from one of three conditions. The vehicle was not properly preconditioned. The engine, the catalytic converter, had not been brought up to proper operating temperature prior to testing, or the engine was shut off while the vehicle was waiting in line to test. A freeway drive to another test station will bring the vehicle into proper operating condition, and it will now pass the test. Number two, the vehicle has a weak, undersized, or failing emission-related component, most often a catalytic converter. A hard freeway drive with a minimal weight in line at the test center may heat the converter enough to yield a marginally passing result. Understand this vehicle's dash to the test center probably does not represent its normal daily drive cycle. This vehicle is a polluter and therefore needs a properly functioning catalytic converter. Number three, the vehicle has high emission readings approaching or exceeding the DEQ cut points. Remember, these readings are at least three times the FTP standards. The variation in the readings is usually not very great, but can be just over or just under the cut points. The answer to the variation usually lies in the fact that more than one interrelated component is weak or failing. For example, a properly functioning oxygen sensor enables the catalytic converter to store and release oxygen. An erratically functioning oxygen sensor can cause the converter to operate properly 1 minute and not the next, creating variable tailpipe readings. With vehicle emission testing, DEQ has done an exemplary job of balancing the interests of Oregon's air quality, Oregon's motoring public, and Oregon's automotive repair community. In my experience, both as a motorist requiring periodic testing and as a repair professional requiring technical assistance, the DEQ VIP staff are always courteous, informed, professional, and very helpful. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Howden? Okay. Thank you.
One quick question. I also brought with me one of my colleagues, John Bennett, president of Upscale Automotive, is facing surgery tomorrow, so he couldn't be here, but he asked me to enter his letter into the record, and I'll leave that here as well.
Great. Thank you very much. Mr. LaPlante.
LaPlante, yes. Thank you. Well, I was asked to come today and speak about our experience with the Sherwood DEQ Test Center.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
I'm sorry. Felix LaPlante.
Thank you.
My son and I own Sherwood Auto Repair in Tualatin. We've been in the area for 20 years. I also am, and my son is an ASE Certified Master Technician with L1 DEQ certification. We've had no problems with any of the test centers. And I agree with Jim. You can take the same vehicle and it fail and drive it 4 miles, come back and it fails. Take it, bring it back the next day and things change. I find no fault in the test center. Things change. The oxygen sensor makes the calibration, the fuel ratio. There are tremendous number of variables. It would be very deep, very hard for me to explain so that you could understand. But that's the way things are. It really is very complicated. So I'm here to say that I have had no problems. We're very satisfied. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dinkfelder and then Representative Berard. You want to defer to Representative Berard? She wants to defer to Representative Berard.
Well, that's very nice of a good representative. I was just wondering who did ask you to come here today?
The manager, Jake, from the Sherwood Test Center.
The executive director of NATA asked me to come today.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Representative Dinkfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding, there was one of the parts of Dr. Adams' testimony mentioned that he found that somebody he knew, their car failed, and they went and had their car fixed, and then it failed again, and then they had their car fixed again, and it failed again. I'm just curious, as somebody who's a professional auto mechanic, would that not raise a red flag for you? I mean, I if there was nothing wrong with the car,
well,
and unless
again,
that person was fixing something that didn't need to be fixed, I'm just sort of curious
about
that. Well, of
course, we're normally are accused of being the bad guys putting parts.
I wasn't pointing.
No, I know. But that's usually people don't like to spend money on cars. I realize that, but it things have to be maintained. If the vehicle fails, like Jim says, we don't have the same degree of test equipment. We have test equipment for exhaust gases, but it's not the same quality of test equipment that DEQ has. So if it's marginal or if it's very close, we're within 3 miles of the test center, so we normally drive a customer's vehicle to the test center. If it goes through, great. If not, then we have to make some adjustments. That's the way it works. That's the rationale. If we had the exact same, I would expect it to be very, very similar, but we don't.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson. Sure.
Would you think it unusual that the test that Dr. Adams went through could be replicated, passing one, fail another, pass, fail, pass, fail? How would you explain that?
I just explained it. You drive, things change. The air, the humidity in the air changes, the temperature of the air, the temperature of the catalytic converter on the car, the fuel quality. I mean, there are tons of variables. That's the way I explain it. If you're asking, if you're my customer and you're standing across the counter, you bring me the car and you say, how come this thing fails? You show me the test results. We look at it. We've seen lots of them over the years, so we have an idea of what causes to fail. We run through a series of tests. We can isolate the problem. If it's a catalytic converter, we know that the outlet temperature of the catalytic converter should be at least 100 degrees more than the inlet temperature. We have a way to test that. We can test the O2 cycles. There are a number of things, a lot of things that we can check.
I have one question, and this is because you're both auto technicians and here. But I've been having this problem with my I'm just kidding.
No free advice, Mr. Chair.
No free advice. Well, then why are we here?
That'll be what it's worth if we give it for free.
Oh, thank you. I did want to ask you. Would you agree with what Andy and Ted were talking about, that with the onboard diagnostics and that kind of a system, partially because yes, it will prompt people to go and get their cars repaired, but do you think that will become a more accurate, or is a more accurate way of measuring what's going on in the car and be able to really give us a much better idea of how our autos are really attaining the levels that we need?
Yes, very, very much so. I think that's the way it's going. Yes, very much.
Will that also make it easier?
Make it easier for us.
For you, oh, yes. as far as customers?
Yeah, very much.
Okay. Any other questions for? Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate you being here. Let me ask John Bailey and Eric Driscoll to come forward, please. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Great.
Great. Thank you for being here. Go ahead and whenever you're ready. We're listening. You've got the question. What am I here for?
Yeah.
Why did you call me here? Why did I call you here?
That's right.
Well, I think they just signed up and didn't know that they were supposed to testify.
Did you not know that this was a sign up to testify on the... on this sheet?
Oh, that's correct. I thought it was just a sign-up sheet.
Okay. Well, then gentlemen, is there anything you would... Well, here's the question, then.
Ask them how they like their vehicle inspection program.
When was the last time you were tested, and how do you like the vehicle inspection program?
Well, actually, I live out of the testing area, so my vehicle has not been tested.
Do you want to state your name for the record, please?
Thank you. My name is John Bailey. This is my grandson, Eric Driscoll. I am an automotive instructor, have been for about 20 years. I've worked very close with DEQ. I've worked very close with several of the mechanics that are here in this place today. I was real curious to how this hearing and what the hearing was about. I was invited by Felix to just see some proceedings. It's been very educational to me, and happiness. Kind of share with my grandson. Is this educational? He said it was. Very interesting. I agree with the mechanics 100%. And there are so many variables with the automotive industry and automotive vehicles that we have today. Every car is a little bit different. You know, if I was a doctor, I have two models to work on. As a mechanic, as an instructor, I've got several.
Okay, I won't tell you the joke that reminds me of.
I understand.
You know which is the better model, though.
But I appreciate that there is interested people within our state legislation that will actually take the time and to understand the industry. If I had a complaint about DEQ, the complaint would be it's only in a couple portions of the state, TriMet area and Medford, and I believe it should be statewide. I believe that the onboard diagnostic 2 second version should be something that was implemented throughout the whole entire state. We have commuters that commute as far as Sheridan into the Portland area. They're polluting because they don't have emission control equipment on their vehicles. They're actually greater polluters than what they are in the Portland area. The same thing with commuters coming out of Grants Pass, maybe a little northern, going down into Medford area. Same idea. No exhaust converters, a straight exhaust, speed equipment, and cars should go fast on the racetrack, maybe not down the road. That's just a matter of opinion, and that was free.
Well, thank you. Do any of you have any problems with your cars you'd like to do? No, I'm just kidding. Well, thank you very much for those comments.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
I appreciate you being here today.
Mr. Chair, I think this gentleman raises a really good point about the fact is that the testing is based on your home address. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Not where you're commuting to or where your endpoint is. And I know I see cars that are emitting a lot of blue smoke. We know that they're burning oil, and I always think, boy, how did they pass that DEQ test?
You know, if I could make a comment, it would be very interesting how many vehicles that the state police have ever cited for visual emissions. It is, I believe, against the law in the state of Oregon to have a car with visual emissions.
Well, we've cut our state police, so unfortunately they probably aren't able to pull those folks over. But thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Oh, I do have one other... Mr. Bailey, I do have one other question for you. Go ahead, and if you would, because we have to be able to get this on the record. Otherwise, there would be this silence on the tape, and we found out in about 1973 that silence on tape is really bad.
Yes, I understand.
If there are so many variables with the cars, then how do we really know which cars are really the polluters? I mean, because both you and Mr. LaPlante and Mr. Hauser talked about a lot of different variables, and DEQ addressed that as well. And from your perspective as a mechanic, you would maybe you can help us kind of, and without taking us through a 400 level auto technician's course in about a minute or less, how can you help us out, help us understand that?
Okay, I'm perplexed with the question. There's a lot of variables, I understand that part, but from car to car, basically, I'm going to say that most cars from 19, actually California, somewhere around 79, and newer vehicles have onboard computers to monitor the system. All of the onboard computers have inputs and outputs, different sensors that are sensing the air quality, sensing the density of the air. Okay. As inputs, there's vacuum sensors, manifold absolute pressure sensors to monitor the actual air within inside the engine. And then there's output sensors there are sensors on the exhaust system that's also looking at the output of the exhaust. Based on that information, if they're all working correctly and if they're all maintained and the vehicle has good, so for example, piston rings, camshaft, timing chain, if the mechanical condition is working correctly, that 1978 computerized vehicle out of California will work very well. To give an example, I worked for Rush Chevrolet several years ago, Tigard, Oregon. Vehicle came in, two exact same vehicles came in. One I tried extremely difficult to adjust it to pass DEQ, several different times, very frustrated. After several attempts, we finally got the car through vehicle, the DQ. Another vehicle, exact same thing, with the same scenario. I said, you know, it's not worth fighting. I've got too many hours in it. I'm not getting paid for. This engine is shot. It needs a new engine. It's the bottom line. New camshaft, new pistons, new rings, etc. Customer says, I want a new engine. We put a new engine in. The emission levels were as a brand new car because we had a new engine and a maintained vehicle. I don't know if that helps any, but what I'm trying to say is maintenance is a very, very key issue.
And the air temperature, the temperature of the vehicle when it's tested, those sorts of variables will also come into play in terms of whether the vehicle can pass or not?
Absolutely. Cold air is much more denser than hot air. You know, it's really kind of, when I'm listening to different lanes, one lane is different than another lane, you know, I may have to question, is that particular lane in the shade versus another one that's in the sun? Does this particular lane have more airflow throughing than this other particular lane? Does it have more airflow that is still a variable? There are different variables. How long did the car sit in line for lane two versus how long did the car sit in the line for lane three? In working with DEQ, part of my automotive past experience is also selling DEQ equipment. I have sold DEQ equipment for the fleets, where the fleets do their own testing in the Portland area. Our equipment is very accurate in the way they do their tests. Our equipment lines up exactly with the same type of accuracy that DEQ's equipment does. As far as, in fact, I will say that there's much more accurate than we do, but I see the same type of a scenario in the testing and the accuracy. Like I say, variables, there's a lot of variables. Heat is probably one of the major factors in maintenance.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Let me have Tyler Ellison and is it Issa Simpson or Issa Simpson? Oh, okay. Certainly.
So I'll do it alone. I'm Tyler Ellison. I own Tyler's Automotive in Tigard and in Wilsonville. I am a DEQ approved repair facility, AAA approved facility. I was asked here to come today by DEQ to share my experiences and ask any questions that you may have. As a shop owner of over 10 years testing and repairing hundreds of vehicles for DEQ failures, I can substantiate what you've heard from my colleagues in the repair industry. There are several reasons why a car will fail. And the reality of what's going on in today's consumer market, from my point of view, is if you don't maintain them, they're going to fail more likely. And the reality of people wanting to spend money on their car is, you know, it's just not there. They will wait, in a lot of cases, till the last minute, till the registration is due, to go through a test to see if they pass or not. And then it's, you know, they have failed the test, and they have failed the test legitimately. We find components within the emission system and fuel system, computer systems of these vehicles that cause that car to fail. It, in my experience, was not a random lane choice, a random test facility that caused that. We are able to identify components that have failed, repair or adjust those components, and the car then passes. You know, it's my policy in my particular shop to take the car to DEQ myself so that I can be in control of that, so the customer doesn't have to deal with a non-passing second attempt. I want to repair what is necessary to repair only. I'm not going to go on a wild goose chase, but there again, I'm not going to diagnose a car beyond its initial failure. If I find a component that has failed that will cause a DEQ failure, I'm going to say I need to replace this oxygen sensor, catalytic converter, or whatever other component it may be, and then we're going to retest that vehicle. So I keep it within my facility until I get a pass on that, and I keep the customer in the loop. But the DEQ representatives have been there to help us get the car to pass. If we have a stubborn vehicle, they will actually come out to our facility and they will help us look at why this car is failing, give us some of their expert opinions of why this car is not going through DEQ, etc. So they have been a colleague in helping us, you know, do our job. And so any questions you have, I'd be open for them.
Well, Representative Dingfelder did have a question, and I know she'd have to scoot. But
yeah, I was just commenting on how it's okay. I won't take it personally that the vehicle inspection, the station right outside of my district is the one that seems to be failing. But I do have a question as far as, do you see, and I don't know where you're located, if you're located in this area or...
Tigard and Wilsonville.
Okay, so you probably, you know, what I might do is talk to some of the shops around my area, because obviously if somebody is probably living in Northeast Portland, they're going to go to a Northeast Portland mechanic. And so I will do some follow-up and talk to some mechanics in my area. But I'm just curious if you ever hear about a variability, because it seems to be the Northeast Portland station that has been...
I don't. Primarily, it's going to be the Sherwood station that I deal with. Like I said, when we find a car that, you know, we test specifically, okay? If it fails, we test for that failure point specifically. When we find a component that has failed, and in 99% of the cases, the car is a polluter. There are variables that will cause a car not to fail, which means that if your car is not warmed up, it has not met normal operating temperature, and it has gone into fuel control mode, the car is a polluter. Okay. Now, on the right day of the right moment, and you've done the right things, it's warmed up, you haven't shut it off in line, you got through the line quickly, you're just on the freeway, et cetera, that car may pass, but it's still going to pollute for another 2 years until you go through its next test, is the reality of that.
I just wanted to note for the record that I recently went through DEQ Northeast Station in line 2. However, mine was a diagnostic test because it is a newer car, so I can't speak to the other tests, but I passed the first time. But I do have a newer car, so I was pleased about that. I would worry if I failed repeatedly. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Daryl? You know, I saw you come in, so I just sort of wrote your name down. Did you?
He missed us.
Would you like to see?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller for the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. Since it's par for the course, I'll tell you I was invited here today by Representative Crummell, Don Phillips, Ted Kasakis, and Andy Ginsberg. So I've got the whole
gamut. We know you're
gamut.
Biased here, right?
Two or three comments that I want to make. First, if I ever go to Las Vegas, I want Dr. Gary Adams to tell me which slot machines to use. He seems to have a gift for quantitative analysis that's rather impressive, and so if I make any trips down there, I hope to have him along with me. Today's new cars have more computer technology built into them than Apollo 11. It's an enormous amount of computer technology to run a car today. If you, I took my car, I have a company car, and it was making some noise in the front in the engine. So I drove it to one of my dealers. I represent car dealers, so I take it to a car dealer to have it repaired. I gave it to the service tech, who's going to do his best for me, and it stopped making the noise. And he drove it for a whole weekend and gave it back to me on Monday, said he couldn't get it to make the noise. So I drove it home, and you know what happened on the way home? Started making that noise again. Now, that same evening, I took my laptop computer, and I was working on my laptop computer, and I got this message. It said, critical memory error message. Your computer will be shut down to save your data. And my computer shut down on me. And I started my computer back up. It worked just fine, and I've been working on it ever since. I have no idea what happened to my computer, nor what happened to my car. But we're in a world now where we're asking that laptop computer to talk to the computers in that car to figure out what's going on inside the vehicle. And then we're shocked when there are statistical anomalies in what does or doesn't pass. I'm just shocked that every time I start my car, it doesn't explode. So there may be a problem. I certainly don't have the background to suggest that what Dr. Adams is saying is right or wrong. I do know with my work with DEQ that they are a committed group of people that are trying to do the job they've been given to do the best they can with the resources and the technology that they have. And if Dr. Adams has brought to their attention issues that need addressed and the legislature provides them with the resources to go after those problems, I think they will do it. Where I am a big fan of DEQ is that they have been, of all of the agencies that I deal with, and we deal with the Department of Justice and DMV and a myriad of agencies, they have been the most solicitous in terms of what can we do to make what we have to do easier for you. They have been on the cutting edge of technology in terms of introducing new ideas on testing vehicles, the whole internet thing that you guys talked about a little earlier, the notion that vehicles could be tested by laser beams, which they used a while back. There are lots of different things that other states aren't doing that our DEQ is willing to put the time and effort into to make sure that they're doing what they do the best they can. And so I'm just a big fan in how hard they're working on behalf of Oregon. And I'm not suggesting that there aren't any problems with any particular state agency. Just so you understand the nexus of DEQ and auto dealers, when we take in an out-of-state vehicle, we purchase an out-of-state vehicle as a trade-in vehicle, we have to have it DEQ tested before we can sell it to somebody who lives in a DEQ containment area. Or if somebody trades in an Oregon-plated vehicle, and that vehicle registration expires, and we're going to sell it again because it has to have a DEQ certificate to be re-registered to the new owner, we also have to get a DEQ certificate in order to get that car registered to the new owner. So we work with DEQ with vehicles that are in our inventory. And when I started 8 years ago with OADA, our dealers were driving every vehicle that needed to be DEQ tested out to a DEQ test station. We were putting vehicles out on the road that were polluting to get tested and bringing them back, and we were paying employees to drive each one of those cars back and forth. And when I brought that issue to the attention of Andy Ginsberg, he said, you know what, we can put that DEQ testing equipment on the back of a truck and we'll take it to your dealership. It turns out with technology they were able to put it on a Winnebago as opposed to a big truck. But they instituted a program where they're coming out to the dealerships and testing the vehicle at our site rather than us having to take all of those vehicles and go to their site. And it's that sort of thinking that has made me a big fan of what DEQ is doing and how they're working. Again, I'm not a technical expert. I certainly can't comment on the data that Dr. Adams provided. But I can tell you that I believe you have a good team at the DEQ Vehicle Inspections Program. And, Mr. Chair, if I might just for a second briefly touch on another issue, I want to let you know, in case you guys don't happen to read the New York Times, that on April 23rd, Governor Kulongowski announced through the New York Times that he intended to adopt California emission standards in the state of Oregon by administrative rule by the end of this year, and to bypass the legislative process and to, by administrative rule, make what is a huge, huge policy change in the state of Oregon without a legislative purview. And that is an issue that we're extremely concerned about. We believe that a policy change of that significance ought to be one that goes through the legislative process. It's not one that an administrative agency ought to have the authority to do by rule. And we hope to work very closely with Republicans and Democrats at the legislature to make sure that you guys have your opportunity to advise and consent, if you will, on making a policy change that significant. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Are there any questions for Mr. Kelly?
Daryl, I would like to thank you for bringing that to our attention, because there also seems to be a little conflict with the governor, because only about a week ago there is a bill on the Senate side that would, in fact, adopt the California emissions, and about a week ago the governor announced that he was going to not back that bill, but was instead wanting to see if he could have if the legislature would form a task force. And then a few days later, he decided that he would forego the legislature altogether and do this. I'm quite disturbed, as you are, that the governor is making that kind of a major policy choice without vetting it through the legislative process. I'm also disappointed that he would make that choice. So, thank you very much for being here and for bringing that to our attention. I appreciate it. Any other comments?
Yes, I think Mr. Fuller has brought up an interesting point that DEQ can take the testing equipment out to places. I personally have some testing that I would like to see, and I think we will take you up on that. That'd be wonderful. With that, I think we've come to the end of our hearing, and I'll close.
I'd like to make one comment.
Representative
Lim. I'm a strong supporter of the DEQ at the same time. As I hear the testimony of Dr. Adams, there must be some problems in the DEQ also. and we need to recognize when he went to six times, he failed, went to the other places, passed. There seems some problem there. I think we need to recognize it, and we need to correct that problem.
Thank
That's
you.
That's my comment.
With that, I'll close the Committee on Environment.
And since I'm the only one left, I will adjourn the Committee on Audits. Thank you all for being here.